Welcome to Sacrilegious Discourse.
For this is what the Sovereign Lord says.
Why do you need prophets to tell people who you are and what you want?
If you can justify everything that the God of the Bible has done, then you can justify any of your behavior.
A lot of this mentality is trickling into what is now mainstream right-wing Christianity.
I am capable of empathy greater than this God of the Bible.
This is a Bible that they tell kids. This is the good Lord. This is the good book. He is fantasizing about murder, mass murder.
Head over to sacrilegiousdiscourse.com right now to find out how to leave us a review or support us on Patreon.
Husband!
Wife!
Do you know what we're doing today?
We are doing a Q&A.
Sure as fuck are.
Yeah, and it's not on a Saturday.
Which,
you know, it's only every once in a while that happens. Yeah. So, sorry, everybody.
I blame the New Testament.
We've been having to do a lot of... You've been having to do a lot of research.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, not we. Mm-hmm. You.
Like, each chapter gets its own Q&A.
I do the editing, you do the research.
Yeah.
You know, that's how this goes.
Mm-hmm.
So, what are we going over today exactly?
Well, we are covering the second half of Jesus's Olivet discourse.
Okay.
Which is Matthew, Little Maddie, chapter 25.
Yeah.
And the reason it's called part two of the Olivet discourse is because he's on Mount Olive a lot for this.
I see.
Okay. Or the Mount of Olives.
Got it.
Yeah.
All right. Well, are you ready to get into this?
Sure as fuck am.
Well, let's do it.
Okie dokie. All right. Hopping into this Q&A covering Little Mattie, chapter 25.
Matthew 25. All mm-hmm. right. Let's do it. Mm-hmm.
This chapter is whack. I mean, we got 10 virgins and talents and shit like that.
It started off pretty,
it bad. Was just crazy.
It was bad.
Just bizarre from beginning to finish.
Anytime you invoke virgins in a story.
And the virginity of the characters aren't even relevant.
It really wasn't. Like, there was no need for that.
Right.
You know, like, we could have been talking about circus clowns.
Right?
You know?
It could have been anything. But no, we're like 10 girls who ain't fucked.
Right.
That was important in no way whatsoever.
It seems very important to the Bible, actually, just overall.
You know, it's very important to a lot of men. How tight is that pussy? And it just seems to be a ownership status.
Some might even call this like a, you know, the stemming of this problem with society.
It's still happening.
It never goes away. It didn't start off good. It's still not great. Anyway.
So chapter 25 simultaneously contains some of the most beautiful humanitarian ethics in the New Testament.
Okay.
And.
Right. The and is important here.
Right. So we've got on the one end, humanitarian, rah, 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 sis, boom, bah. And on the other hand, some of its most frightening, judgmental imagery.
Right.
You're going to hell forever, die.
Yeah, humans are awesome and also fucking die.
Yeah, yeah.
That's the message.
The whole chapter is always be prepared, stay ready, keep working, take care of people, and use what you've been trusted with. Because Jesus may arrive and or return unexpectedly, and when that day comes, he'll separate everyone according to how they treated vulnerable people.
Is this the chapter where they the profit makers and all that, and where they get the gold?
Don't
not make a profit.
Yes,
you got to be yes. a good little capitalist.
The parable of the talents, it's called.
You got to be a good little capitalist.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. But then Jesus, according to the book of Matthew, wraps all of that advice up in some spectacularly threatening story.
Right.
He's like, do these things. Just be good. Be good. Be decent. You know, take care.
Yeah.
Wait for me kind of thing.
Right.
or else die forever
gnashing
and be punished.
Teeth and shit.
Yeah, yeah.
All that.
It's pretty over the top.
It really was.
Yeah.
It really was.
Yeah.
It's not the friendly Jesus that I, the buddy Jesus that
it's
I imagined.
It's not,
you know?
Buddy Jesus. It's very American. Jesus is too woke and he wants to get you.
It's not that Jesus saves image that you see everywhere.
Right,
know?
Yeah. It's mean Jesus.
It's mean Jesus.
I do not like mean Jesus.
It's asshole Jesus.
All right, so this chapter gets split into 1, 2, 3 parts.
Three parts.
Okay?
Yeah.
And the first part is about the 10 virgins, the parable of the virgins.
Yeah.
Okay? The next one is the parable of the talents. And then the last one is... when he separates the nations.
I just wanted to point this out because we have fans that have pointed this out that they really love it when you flip pages.
I know.
And you just flipped a lot of fucking pages.
I didn't do it quietly either because I knew somebody out there would appreciate it. Here's the thing. I have to print my notes because I flip back and forth through them. And I do everything on my phone, not a laptop, not a tablet, literally my phone.
Yeah.
And it's very difficult flipping pages back and forth to, you know, do my thoughts and my ideas and everything on a phone. And it's also, I have fat thumb syndrome and I tend to accidentally scroll.
And then I just lose
my fucking place.
Yeah, that's a problem.
So
you used to keep your notes on the phone.
Yeah.
That was problematic. Yeah.
And so halfway, 3/4 of the way through the Old Testament, I would say 3/4 of the way through the Old Testament, I started printing.
Yeah.
And that's much better.
Right.
Okay, that's way off topic. But anyways, that's why you hear the flipping of the pages.
Sure, sure.
We got the parable of the 10 virgins and the flipping of the pages.
Right.
Okay?
Yeah.
So the thing with the virgins, again, their virginity status is not...
It's not relevant.
...relevant in any way whatsoever.
Right.
5 of them are wise virgins.
Because they remembered the oil.
And 5 of them are unwise.
Because they didn't remember the oil.
Right. And so this part is about the necessity of being constantly prepared to appear before God like any second.
Mm-hmm.
You never know when God's just going to go and pop out of nowhere in a jump scare. Okay. So they go out to meet a bridegroom at a wedding. Right.
Okay.
So I did have some questions, as did you, about, like, but why virgins?
Yeah.
Why did it matter that they were unfucked?
Yes.
I don't understand.
Yes.
The Greek word is parthenoi, and it is usually translated as virgin.
Okay.
But it can also just mean young, unmarried woman. Kind of, like, synonymous. And so we're supposed to be understanding this less to be about virgins and more just... These were some fucking bridesmaids.
They, you know, I'm just going to say this because I feel like if that's the case, that the newer versions of the Bible should update accordingly.
Yes, you know? And no, though, because then it would also lose, like, okay, I'll give you another example where the language was changed to make it easier to read, but to me made it not as good. In the next section, we're going to cover the parable of the talents. Our translation automatically change the word talent to gold. So we read it as gold. We didn't even have to worry about talents.
Yeah.
Had I not known the book, like, had there not been the little headline that said the parable of the talents, we would have had no idea that that was translated for us. And we would have lost something there.
Okay.
So yes and no. I think that's why these Q&As are important. So we do get the original wording, but also some of the deeper, and this is what they actually meant by that. Because let's face it, young maidens were expected to be virgins.
Sure. No, I understand that, I guess, but it's more to me about, like, the fact that that section is named the parable of the talents is just tradition, right? Like, that technically is not the original wording. It was done in a different language. There's been so many translations since the original text.
But it comes from the original Greek, and the Greek was, that is where our word talent comes from today.
Okay.
Like, to have skills and, like, things within us that we use that come naturally come from the same term.
Right.
So
I guess I'm just saying that the name, like, to call it the 10 virgins, it could be the 10 young women. right?
It doesn't really matter.
Sometimes, not always, maybe, but right. sometimes there could be decisions made to say,
I totally agree.
We don't give a fuck what this section's called. It's about this, not that. The virgins are irrelevant. You know, immaterial.
Yeah, it's about 10 people.
Right.
And actually, even their gender is irrelevant, honestly.
Sure.
So it doesn't even have to be 10 young maidens. It doesn't have to be 10 bridesmaids. It doesn't have to be any of that. It could just be 10 people.
Right, right. That's kind of what I was getting at. Not necessarily all of the stories, but like some of them, I feel like in a modern society, it hurts it to have things like the 10 virgins as opposed to the 10 young women.
So
or whatever.
So the atheist and the historian in me 110% agrees with you. The literary analysis has a hard disagree because language is so important and preserving what they said and what they meant is so important to me. So I have really mixed feelings on this because if we could examine this only as literature, that would be fine. You know what I mean? Like we could keep the original language and it wouldn't harm today. It wouldn't be harmful.
Okay.
But because it can't just be examined as literature,
right?
That's where I agree with you.
Yeah.
That we should just change it because fucking people,
and
you know?
Let's be honest. Most people that are reading the Bible are not reading it for hard dissection.
Yeah.
They're reading it for church. They're reading it for a passing thing to do.
So they want the virgins.
Right.
No.
That's all I'm saying.
Yeah. No, I agree with you. I agree with you. It's just... It's hard for me to get on board because there's just a part of me that, like, my heart will always be with word choice and, like, in other religious texts, we could examine it as just literature.
Sure.
And I hate that we can't do this here.
Right.
It's annoying. All right. So the virgins, right? It usually can mean just unmarried women and... unmarried status. Basically, it's fucking bridesmaids.
Yeah.
Okay. And the women are generally understood as being wedding attendants waiting for the bridegroom, not women whom the bridegroom is marrying. So that was my mistake. I was like, what? It says there's bridegrooms and 10 fucking wedding chicks.
Virgins.
Yeah.
Right.
Like, I don't think that it was crazy or ridiculous of me to be like, what? He's marrying these 10 girls, these 10 virgins. Because going towards what we were just discussing, why mention their virginity at all if it's not relevant to the story? You know?
Right.
So I was like, obviously he's marrying them, but no, he's not.
Now, to be fair, I questioned your take on that.
You did. And somebody, because we do the chapter readings every Tuesday in our live Discord.
Yeah.
Tuesday at 10 p.m. Eastern, somebody in the Discord also pointed out that I probably was reading that wrong.
Yeah.
But I held firm because I'm sorry. I'm reading the words on the page, and that was the message that I got out of it. There's 10 virgins, and they're waiting on the bridegroom. What?
Sure.
It made sense to me.
Not me.
I hear you, but... I'm not saying that you're wrong. I'm saying that I wasn't necessarily wrong for thinking what I thought.
Sure. No,
and
I gotcha.
Honestly, that's on the Bible.
Right.
And this imaginary God who can't be bothered to make sure that his fucking words are clear in a book that we're supposed to say is his word.
Yeah.
You know? But we've gone over that before. Anyway, so there's 5 of the 10 virgins who are caught unprepared. And they are denied entry because the 5 prepared maidens are kind of selfish assholes.
Mm.
They basically say, no, you can't have our fucking oil. Go buy your own. Right?
Yeah.
And we're like, oh, that's mean.
Right.
And so then the unprepared women leave. And while they're gone, the bridegroom arrives and he and the 5 prepared girls, they go in and shut the fucking door.
Yeah.
And they lock it, apparently.
Right.
And nobody else can get in after them.
Sure.
It's impossible. It's impossible to unlock the door and open it.
Yeah.
Okay? So the unprepared girls, they come back with their oil, and they're like, hey, assholes, we're back. Let us in. And the groom's like, bitch, I don't know you.
Right.
I mean, he doesn't say bitch, but he says, I don't even know you.
Sure.
Like, why are you even here?
Right.
Like, I don't recognize you. And that's fucking brutal as fuck.
Yeah.
Because, like, obviously you do know if you asked us to be your fucking bridesmaid. We just didn't bring oil. Sorry.
Right.
Whatever. But
not bridesmaids. They're virgins going to visit the bridegroom.
Right. They're attendants, which is essentially like what we would call bridesmaids, except that they're his attendants.
Right. Which is why they're not bridesmaids.
Right. But whatever. It's just a term.
I would just, you said it. I just wanted to clarify.
Yeah.
Okay.
But anyway, he's like, you were invited, but then you were unprepared. So now I don't even know you get.
Right.
You don't get to come in. And they're like, the fuck, man. Like, yeah, you know us. Like, let us in.
Right.
Right. Elsewhere in the book of Matthew, we are given teachings that make his response super uncomfortable, weird, and wrong. Okay.
Okay. Because
elsewhere in the book of Matthew, it's like, yeah, let anybody in. Like, right. If they knock, you know.
Well, and more important, like, this is supposed to be like a parable about heaven, right? Like, getting into God's good grace or God's kingdom or whatever the fuck it is, right?
Yeah.
And here we are letting the people that didn't share their oil with other people who forgot.
Yeah.
We're letting them in. And we're kicking the other ones out.
Exactly.
And they all seem like they're all virgins, right? So they're all young women.
Mm-hmm.
That's what we're going with that, apparently.
Chaste and right. Well-behaved.
But that's not enough. And so the selfish get in because they were prepared.
Mm-hmm.
And the forgetful get left out because they're forgetful.
And see, that is what we read out of it. That's not what we're supposed to take from it. That is what we took from it because that's what it was. But that's not what we're supposed to take.
Oh, okay.
Because up to this point, Jesus has repeatedly emphasized generosity, hospitality, caring for strangers, giving to people who are in need, loving one's neighbor, not even knowing who might be important.
Sure.
Like, we just saw that. You know, you never know who's going to be... you know, in the end of this chapter, he's going to, like, separate the people and tell them, anytime you fed somebody, that was me.
Yeah.
So you never know, right?
Right.
He has emphasized caring for the quote-unquote least, which I would think would include the unprepared.
Sure.
Okay? And then all his prepped girls, they're like, sorry, can't spare any oil. And then they start singing, well, good luck, babe. Well, good luck, babe. Chapel Roan.
Okay.
You don't know that song?
Nope.
Oh, my God. It's such a good song, y'all. It's one of my faves. But I love Chapel Roan, so anyways. But this book, or this chapter, this parable, is not about the oil, okay?
I didn't figure it was about the oil. It was about being always ready.
Always prepared.
Yeah.
The oil is supposed to represent something that cannot simply be transferred to somebody else. Okay, so he used a bad example. You can't.
I'm sitting there like, you can though. You
right.
There's a way to do that. Yeah.
Yeah, they could have just shared their oil. Right.
Yeah.
He's saying you can't become spiritually prepared because somebody else prepared for you. And so a better example would be like 10 people are getting ready to take an exam. 5 of them have studied. 5 of them haven't. 5 of them say, give me your studying.
Yeah. And that doesn't work.
That doesn't work.
Right.
You can't give them your study prepared. Now you can give them your cheat notes.
Sure.
Or, you know, whatever.
No, and I got the message to an extent when we were reading it.
I didn't.
But at the same time,
I'm thick. I did not get it.
It's not clear. It's not overtly clear.
Because he gave an example of a solid object that can clearly be shared.
Right.
And was like, those bitches were totally within their rights not to share. The other one should have brought their own. And it's like, no, that's not what you mean to say, Jesus.
Right.
Clearly, by all of your other fucking lessons, that's not what you mean to say, Jesus.
Yeah.
What you mean to say, here, Jesus, let me fix it for you. What you mean to say is, and then, you know, fill in a better example of something that cannot actually be shared, like studying for a test.
Sure.
The preparedness, the mental and emotional preparedness, not the item that you brought that is a display of your preparedness.
More than that, I feel like the fact that they are young women, virgins, as the Bible says, right?
Mm-hmm.
It kind of goes against their message they're trying to convey as well, because mm-hmm. they're already physically in shape to, he entered into heaven.
Right.
So where are the instructions that they are lacking to? Like, what did they fail at?
And that's why the virginity is beside the point and not the point and should not have been anywhere mentioned.
But it confuses the point.
That's what I'm saying.
Right.
It should not have been anywhere mentioned. It should have just been 10 people.
Sure.
And the item should have been an emotional preparedness, not an item.
Yeah.
That can clearly be split up. Because what the girls that were prepared are basically saying is, you can't assume someone else's preparedness can substitute for your own, you know?
Yeah.
I can't think of a better example. It's dumb. Another thing that we didn't notice, but that when I was looking up notes for this chapter, is notice that the bridegroom is quote unquote delayed. That's something else that we're going to see in the next. He's not the master that gives away the talents to his servants. He's not delayed, but he's away a long time.
Okay.
Okay. The early Christian movement expected Jesus to return any second now, right? Apocalypse about to happen any second, right?
Yeah.
But the return kept not happening. So Matthew is writing this to a community. Don't forget, this is 70 years later.
Yeah.
He's writing this into a community for whom that delay was already becoming a theological problem.
Wow.
Yeah. I got goosebumps when I read that.
Because we're like 2,000 plus years on. Or 2,000 years on.
Yeah. And 70 years on, they were like, you know,
40 years on.
40. I always say 70, and I'm terrible with numbers.
It was 70 AD, but Jesus was 30 whatever when he died.
Okay, so this is 40 years later.
Right.
Okay, so the parable is basically saying, just FYI, he might take a little bit longer than you thought, but stay ready anyways.
Yeah.
And then they're like looking at each other like, yeah?
How long we gotta wait?
Yeah, yeah.
Jeez, the end is nigh, man.
No, the leaders are looking at each other like, do you think this message will work? And the people that are listening are like, how long though?
Yeah.
And so that's why they were writing this. They were like, it doesn't matter how long. Okay. This is a fascinating glimpse into the psychological problem of an apocalyptic movement whose apocalypse hasn't fucking happened.
Right.
Right. And the date keeps moving.
Yeah.
Right.
And so the wow.
Yeah. Yeah.
Interesting.
The earliest Christians expected the return of Jesus any minute. And so eventually, you know, somebody was asking, where is he? Hello?
So the end is nigh bullshit is kind of just built into the whole religion from the get-go.
From the get-go, right. Yeah. From the start, they were asking, when's it happening?
That's fun.
And the answer is always any minute. But Matthew doesn't say, so we were wrong about the timing. Sorry, he doesn't say that.
Right.
Instead, the answer for 2,000 fucking years has been, it'll happen when it happens. The delay is itself part of the test.
Right, yeah.
You should just always be ready. For 2,000 plus years, just always never not be ready.
When hundreds, maybe thousands of generations die, is it still a test? Because
Christians would say yes.
Okay.
Christians would say yes. And they would also say, and it's going to happen while I'm living. It's happening any minute.
I see. I'd be more inclined to call it a scam.
That's what I call it. But I'm not a believer. But believers have been looking at this for 2,000 years. And they're still like, any minute now, probably while I'm alive, too.
Right.
Like, these are the end times. Like, for 2,000 years, every generation is like,
oh, your parents think that the end is coming soon.
The end is nigh. The end is nigh. The end is nigh. Just look at what's happening in the Middle East. The end is nigh.
Right.
And everything is a sign.
Right.
For 2,000 years. Yeah. And, I mean, every single generation, they are like 110% certain.
Sure.
Okay?
Yeah.
Because always be prepared. It's about to happen any minute.
Right.
That is, I'm sorry, that's over the top.
But like, if you die before it happens, like, what were you preparing for? Like,
it doesn't matter.
What are we supposed to be like? If it's not happened, like, what is this thing that a thousand generations have missed out on?
You'll meet Jesus. Don't worry about it. You'll meet Jesus. It's fine. We're not there yet, but it's fine.
Sure.
Okay. All right. So that's all the parable of the 10 virgins. Right. Yeah. Okay. Now we're moving into the parable of the talents.
Okay.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Verses 14 and 15 read, again, it will be like a man going on a journey who called his servants and entrusted his wealth to them. To one, he gave 5 bags of gold, is what our translation said.
Yeah.
But it's actually, it reads 5 talents. To another, 2 bags or 2 talents. And to another, 1 bag or 1 talent.
Okay.
Each according to his ability. Then he went on his journey. Okay. In the Greek, a talent was worth about 20 years of a day laborer's wage.
Damn.
Yeah. So to give one of his servants 5 talents, he gave him 100 years worth of labor.
Yeah, that's a lifetime.
Yeah.
Just fucking disappear, man.
Obviously a parable. Yeah. Yeah. So the first two say the master entrusted me with something. I'm going to actively do something with it.
Sure.
The talent, the gold. I'm going to do something with the talent that I was given.
Can you, okay, I just want to, I want to put myself in this scenario here. Can you imagine somebody giving you a lifetime of money and saying, I'm entrusting this to you with no instructions, and then it's up to you to decide what to do with it. And then you go and invest it all. Like, look, you already have a lifetime of money sitting here.
Yeah.
You have no instructions. I don't know that I'm doing shit with that. I'd just be scared that I had it.
Right.
I'm like, holy shit.
I don't know that I would just bury it, but I also don't know that I'd invest it. I'm pretty sure that I would just like live a small, meek life out of it and let it be what it is.
I think I'd want to ask more questions.
True. Like,
what the fuck
is happening? That is true. But keep in mind, though, their whole self-instruction was the master entrusted me with something. I will actively do something with these talents.
But why?
You're not hearing what I'm saying.
Okay.
Okay. So right. Just
I'm
calm
trying.
And wait.
I'm trying.
Okay? I'm going to actively do something with the talents that I have been given.
Okay.
Okay. The third servant says, the master entrusted me with something. I'll protect it by doing absolutely nothing with the talents that I was given.
Okay.
So the third servant's description of the master, just to start there, is really eyebrow raising. He says, I knew that you were a harsh man. And then he describes the master as someone who, quote, harvests where he didn't sow. So he's like, you're wanting us to do all this work for you without you doing anything yourself. And I knew that you were kind of mean. So I was scared to do anything with this fucking money. So yeah, I fucking buried it. What?
Okay.
Okay. What's really interesting, that's like a really ugly image. He's basically saying you expect profits from work you didn't personally do. You just like gave it to us to do the work for you, right?
Sure. Sure.
One would expect that the master would respond, how dare you besmirch my character, you uppity fuck.
Right?
Like, you're fired. I hate you forever.
Yeah.
Right? Go away. But instead, his response is basically fine. If you knew that's how I operate, you should have acted accordingly and put it in a fucking bank.
Okay.
Right? This is outrageous because the story doesn't really challenge the servant's description, like, at all.
So that they admit God's a dick.
Well, the master in this story is a dick, definitely.
Sure.
The story assumes also that the investments will all be successful, which you and I pointed out.
Yeah.
Like, what if an investment went bad?
Right.
And then I pointed out investments are basically like a form of legalized fancy gambling.
Yeah.
And I'm pretty sure that parts of Christianity frown on gambling, but what do I know?
Right.
Right. This also creates a huge modern ethical problem because the parable essentially rewards risk taking under an unequal system.
Sure.
Okay. So it assumes like, yeah, of course there is going to be success of the investments. That's the way the parable goes.
Right.
So yeah.
Yeah.
So it's basically saying those who have demonstrated productivity will receive additional resources. Those who have little will lose what little they have. Womp womp.
Right, but I can see how this just doesn't like.
It doesn't.
Right. Yeah. Because let's say you're hearing this message. You're like, oh shit, I better make sure that I always make money with money that I'm like, or whatever. If I'm mm-hmm. giving, if I have faith, I better make more faith with it. Like, if I don't, then I'm failing. Like, you're setting people up for disaster.
Right. And this is another case where Jesus used poor wording.
Yeah.
And he should not have used money as the example.
Sure.
The physical object that he chose was incorrect.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Because in this chapter, whoever has, meaning whoever has whatever XYZ, actually means whoever has demonstrated the quality being rewarded, which is faithfulness or responsiveness or productivity, readiness, preparedness. Whoever has these positive attributes,
yeah.
they're going to be rewarded more
okay.
than people who don't have these positive attributes.
Okay.
That's what he means. Okay. And by talents, that I was really trying to emphasize that. Think of talents less as the money that Jesus says, the gold,
yeah.
and more as how we use the word talents today.
Okay.
Okay. I have given you talents. I have given you positive attributes.
Yeah.
And you've done nothing with them. You okay. have let people starve. You have stood by and done nothing to help others.
But he gave one guy, the guy that got the least amount of talents, right?
Mm-hmm.
He expected a
little bit.
Sure.
According to your ability.
Okay.
He's like, I didn't expect a lot from you. I just hoped for a little bit. And I gave you a little talent. I gave you a little light in your heart, and you did nothing with it. You fed nobody. You helped nobody. You didn't prepare for me. You did nothing.
Okay.
That's what the parable actually means. But you have to know all of the deeper meaning of the words.
Parables are not great.
They're not good. His word choice and his examples are terrible.
Yeah.
I should not have to dig this deep to figure out, oh, you just want people to be nice and be good.
Yeah.
Okay. Okay. What you're saying is God is giving you gifts inside your heart, not actual physical fucking gold and
right, because the analogies
oil.
Don't match up
they
when
don't.
You bring them to their logical conclusions of what you're
right.
actually dealing with. So
right.
it's just really bad wordplay.
It's so bad. It probably made more sense to the audience, and it probably made more sense in the original Greek.
Okay, maybe.
2,000 years later, we are trying to untangle this, and Christians are like, yeah, invest money. And it's like, right, yeah, that's not what he meant, bruh.
Yeah.
He's not talking about money here.
Right.
He's saying money, but that's not what he means.
Sure.
You got it wrong.
Sure.
Here's a little side note that I found interesting, and I pointed this out a little bit. The master in this parable
yeah.
suggests banking as the quote-unquote safe option.
Yeah.
Actually, you pointed this out.
Yeah.
This is a hilarious detail because Jesus' story casually just like whatevs, just casually puts out there the existence of banking and interest-bearing deposits.
Yeah.
And that is like, he's like, it's fine. It's the worst case possibility, but it's still fine. That's normal. You could have at least done that, right?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
This completely overlooks the complicated biblical history of lending with interest.
Right.
Which
yeah, it is
Jewish
against
is
Jewish law.
Yeah.
At some points anyway.
In the Old Testament, in Hebrew law, yeah. it is not okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. The Hebrew Bible contains prohibitions against charging interest in certain circumstances, particularly when lending to fellow Israelites in need.
Yeah.
Yeah. But Matthew's parable treats earning interest through banking as the obvious fallback. I mean, if you do nothing else, you should at least do that. Like, it's fine. It's fine. This is fine.
Yeah. Yeah.
And, you know, I get flack every time I say it, but Jesus was a bad Jew.
Oh,
sorry,
yeah. No,
but
absolutely.
He was.
Yeah.
And I know that he was just another Jewish element. Well, thunder has entered the chat.
Apparently. Shit.
Wow, wow, wow. Okay. So let's try and cover this last section before we lose electricity. Some kind of magical...
God's like, how dare you?
Now, to be fair, about noon today, I received a notification that Southern Ohio is due for flooding.
Yeah.
And everybody on the neighborhood app was like, it's not even raining. The fuck are you talking about?
Yeah.
Which I found hilarious.
Sure.
So, I mean, flooding was going to happen. How does flooding happen? Rain. So I knew rain was coming. I just didn't know what happened right in the middle of the fucking podcast. I'm just saying, like, it ain't God, y'all. The weatherman said this is going to happen.
It was funny because it was like kind of came out of nowhere. I'm like, whoa.
Right. All right. So let's move on to the last one. Hilariously, the judgment of the nations.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
This is the manner in which God will deal with the righteous and the wicked in the judgment of the great day. Remember, he's going to have the goats and the sheep, and he's going to separate them, and then the ones on his right hand and the ones on his left. And
sure.
Which one is good and which one is bad?
Sure.
No, I'm asking you, which one is good, which one is bad, right or left?
I mean, according to God, the left is bad and the right's good.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
And sheep and goats, which one's good, which one's bad?
Sheep good, goat bad.
You got it. Yeah. You passed the test.
Right.
You prepared. You're going to get into heaven. So when Jesus is speaking, he creates this is like a little bit irrelevant to the section. This is just something that we noticed and pointed out.
Yeah.
He creates this third person character. And we're like, why are you referring to yourself in the third person, you fucking weirdo? He's like the Son of Man who will come. And he refers to this guy over there. And it's like, you're talking about yourself.
Yeah.
You are the guy that will come.
Yeah.
Right. But Matthew's presenting Jesus's identity through all of this apocalyptic imagery rather than simply having Jesus announce, I'm God. And when I return, I'm going to sit on the throne and I'm going to judge the fuck out of you.
Yeah.
Okay. And it's like, but why though? Why can't you just? But the answer is within the other two parables, because Jesus is never fucking clear. And furthermore, God is never fucking clear. And furthermore, the Bible, both versions, old and new, are never fucking clear. You know why? Because man wrote it. And guess who's not fucking clear? Man. Mankind.
Especially 2,000 years ago, man.
Just as much today. Have you read anything Trump has said? It can only good happen.
Yeah.
Fuck off. Or fucking what's her butt saying be best. God.
Yeah.
God, these people. No.
Wait, who says be best? What's that?
Melania.
Oh, that's right. That's
right. Yeah, she said
sorry,
be best.
Sorry, I couldn't remember who was. Yeah.
They're all stupid.
Sure.
It is hard to keep straight.
Yeah.
I have kind of adopted that as my unofficial ridiculous motto. Be best.
Mm.
Like, I've always said, you know, try to be the best version of myself I can be. And then I shorthand that to just be best because it's fun and it makes me laugh.
Sure.
Fucking Melania. All right. So anyway, what is this third person bullshit? The background here is actually important and kind of lends to why.
Okay.
Daniel, which we have talked about a lot in this stupid chapter or in this stupid book.
Right.
Often refers to, quote unquote, one like a son of man who comes before the Ancient of Days and receives authority, dominion, and kingship. Thus, Jesus refers back to Old Testament folks, and he repeatedly uses son of man as a self-reference.
Sure.
You know, because Matthew's like, see what we did there?
Right.
We did some Old Testament shit.
Yeah.
See how we got the Hebrew Bible up in here.
Right.
Okay. So it must be real.
Sure.
Right?
Yeah.
Matthew's basically saying Jesus is the earthly speaker now, but the apocalyptic son of man is the heavenly figure who will appear in glory later. Same guy, but like not dead yet. Okay. So it's like a literary / theological way of separating Jesus's present earthly role from his future eschatological role.
Okay.
It's more of that, like, is it God or is it Yahweh or is it Jesus, the Christ, or like who it be?
Yeah.
It's all of them because it's all man and it's all a jumbled mess.
Right.
Okay. So let's move into the chapter now, or let's move into the section now. Sorry.
Okay. I was like, haven't we been in the chapter?
Yeah, we're into the third section now.
Yeah.
Okay.
But
I just want to point that out before we actually get into this parable.
Got it.
Okay. So sheep and goats. Right. He's addressing the nation and he's like, I'm going to get all the sheep and goats and I'm going to separate those fuckers. Sheep and goats, though, weren't necessarily enemies. They were like just animals. Right.
They're both graze on grass.
Yeah.
Whatever.
Yeah. They're both valuable livestock.
Sure.
Right. So this wasn't like good animal versus evil animal, although a lot of scary movies do have goats as the evil and like the scapegoat member that was evil.
Yes, the scapegoat was evil.
So the goats are usually scary, even though they're like not actually evil.
Yeah.
But this separation is probably based partly on practical herding realities, like how they herd the animals.
Okay.
Since they couldn't be kept together, or they could be kept together, but they could also be separated when necessary, like depending on what season it was or what the animals needed or whatever, right? So Jesus here is using a very familiar agriculture kind of image to sort a mixed group.
Okay.
He's not saying like bad here, good there. He's just saying these ones that do this over here, these ones that do that over there.
Sure.
Okay. What I find interesting is that, yeah, the animals aren't evil, but he's about to go into how, but the ones represented by the goats are.
Right.
So I'm like, it doesn't matter. And with
the
imagery
from, like you said, the scapegoat and stuff like that from the Old Testament, like it, you know, the amount of times that they reference goats as bad and
it's already been
good. It's already kind of implanted.
Yeah. It's shorthand, but it's good shorthand.
Right.
And I'm like, you could tell me all you want that it doesn't matter, but clearly it fucking does because he keeps doing it.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. Well, the Bible does too.
That's what I mean.
Yeah.
Yeah. So basically, he judges them and he separates them and he's like, the reward is going to go to the ones on my right hand and the judgment and condemnation is going to go to those on my left hand, right? Sure. And then he drops a huge bomb because he states that the criterion for judgment does not rely on the following, okay? It's not any of the following questions. Did you have the correct theology? Did you believe the correct doctrine? Did you believe in Jesus? He doesn't ask those questions.
Okay.
Okay. Here is where he says judgment will be dependent upon.
Okay. All right.
This is...
It's important for those who want to get into heaven, right?
Yeah.
You got to know this shit.
Other books and even other chapters might say different, but here in this fucking chapter... I bet they do. But here in this chapter, it doesn't matter if you believe in Jesus. Here in this chapter, judgment will rely upon the following criterion. Did you feed hungry people? Did you give thirsty people something to drink? Do you welcome strangers? Do you clothe naked people? Do you care for sick people? Do you visit prisoners? He's saying, are you helping the needy? Are you good in your heart? Are you a good guy or a bad guy?
I was just trying to think which ones I'd done. I think I've done everything except for visit a prisoner.
Yeah, so, I was going to say we've done a lot, but we might want to add that to our list, make sure we get into heaven.
Unless you count like, you know, animals that are caged up in like animal shelters.
Yeah, that's true.
Those are prisoners, right?
But they're not people and they don't have souls according
to them.
I know, right? Yeah. So Jesus says, whatever you did for the least of these people, you did for me. And this creates some interesting tension with Matthew's other material, because Matthew also contains plenty of emphasis on believing in Jesus, obeying commandments, producing good fruit, being ready for judgment, accepting Jesus and following him.
Sure.
So we've got this like, but are you basically a good person? Versus, are you a good person and are you a Jesus freak?
Right.
And that is where a lot of stress comes from, because a lot of your more progressive Christians are like, just be good, you're fine.
Well, and that's we've been railing about this the whole time through Matthew. The consistency is not there. There's no consistency.
Right.
There is zero consistency with messaging in this book. And to try to understand and pull out any type of theology from this is maddening.
Yeah.
Like, it's just not very well presented.
Right, because this final exam looks a lot like humanitarianism.
Sure.
You know?
Sure.
Which should be fine. And it's something I've always said.
Right.
Like, I try to be a good person and I try to be good to others. And I try to give right up, you know, past the point of what I should be given.
Yeah.
And I think that that is fine for me. If there is some kind of afterlife, which I don't believe in, I would like to think that I will be judged not too bad, not too shabby.
Well, and I've talked about it in previous episodes years ago even, and like some of our specials and what have you. When I was younger, I wanted to try to be Christian because I was in an area that was very Christian.
And it would have been helpful.
Easier to be that group, right?
Yeah.
And, you know, when I couldn't figure it out, when I didn't know what, I'm just like, well, if I'm a good person and this is real, then I'll be fine, right? Mm-hmm. Like, surely that'll be enough.
And then you find out, no, it's not enough.
Well, but like, who the fuck, I mean, like, why does it fucking matter? Like, why does God care? Why would you be part of any religion where a God, any God, cares beyond the fact that you're a good person about who you're having sex with and what you're doing with, you know, whatever, and like
it's how just, you identify
yeah.
as a gender or
whether
not.
You eat shrimp and eat have wear mixed clothing, like
how long is your hair,
why?
Tattoos, that kind of stuff.
Can we just stop at good person? Like, that seems like enough, right?
It should
I
be.
I feel like it does.
It should be, because it seems awfully hard for a lot of people to just be a good person.
Right. And then, obviously, that's a subjective stance, too. Right? Like, what is good to one person might not be good to another person, yada, 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 yada. But still.
Yeah.
It's just... It shouldn't be that hard. Angers me. It angers me quite a bit.
It just seems to me it shouldn't be that hard.
Right.
You know?
Yeah.
Especially when the next part that we get to in this chapter, it finishes off with the bit about eternal punishment.
Okay.
So he doesn't just say, just be a good person and you'll be fine.
Right.
He says, just be a good person or else I will fucking kill you and punish you forever.
Yeah.
And it's like, hold on, slow your roll, guy.
Right.
That's a bit much.
Yeah.
That's overkill.
Yeah. This bit about like throughout that we're heading into more now with the eternal punishment shit.
Yeah. And there's questions
really
about that. There's questions
okay.
about the translation of that, actually.
Oh.
Yeah. The Greek adjective is derived from aeon, like where we get the word
yeah,
eon.
Right.
It means an age.
Okay.
Which is commonly translated as eternal or everlasting, but we don't know that that's what an age means. There's significant scholarly and theological debate about how precisely the term functions here.
Okay.
Because we don't know what they meant by that.
Sure.
So there's how long is the punishment? We're not sure. It depends on what you mean by an age or an eon.
Yeah.
Like, we still use that term today to just mean, like, really long fucking time, undefined.
Yeah.
Like, oh, I had to wait for eons, right?
Sometimes, yeah. No, I agree. But more than that, sometimes it feels like we're trying to inject too much meaning into these things mm-hmm. that people were writing about back then when it was probably just, let's scare these people into doing the right thing,
mm-hmm.
right? Like that's
yeah.
It was probably very simple and that's what a lot of this feels like. They're just trying to scare them into either A, participating in their religion, or B, you know, be better, right?
Well, I think that that's clear in the fact that they obviously had no idea this was going to last for 2,000 years.
Yeah.
They literally thought Jesus was coming around the mountain any second.
Right.
So,
right.
I mean, yeah, it was never meant to be this closely examined.
Sure.
And that makes all of our questions all the more relevant, because it's like, what did you actually mean? But moreover, did you even really mean it?
Right.
And would you have meant it still? Or would you have rephrased it had you known that we'd still be talking about it 2,000 years later?
Right.
Because to me, that's an important question. That matters.
Yeah.
Like, sure, maybe you said what you meant and you meant what you said, but would you have any problem clarifying if you knew that it would last 2,000 years? That,
yeah.
to me, is so important.
Right.
And of course, there's nobody alive to ask. So. Well,
obviously.
Yeah.
If Jesus would just come back, though.
I mean, if God would just, like, stick his head down and
sure.
give some clarification.
Yeah.
There, you know?
Doesn't take much.
So there's several major interpretations of the final judgment.
Okay.
Based on how we interpret the word aeon.
Sure.
Okay. First, we get your traditional eternal conscious torment, which is the wicked suffer forever. And that's the easiest and most childishly simplistic way to look at it.
Sure.
They said everlasting, they mean forever. And I like to think of wicked people getting their skin peeled off over and over again, like what happened to Dean in Supernatural.
Sure.
When he went to hell. And that is just really cool with me because I am so cruel that I just love the idea of people getting punished forever.
Right.
That is awesome.
Right.
Okay. Then we get your annihilationism / conditional immortality.
Okay.
Okay. The wicked are ultimately destroyed rather than consciously tortured forever.
Okay.
I'm not sure where they would get that, but it is easier to swallow to imagine that eventually they just kind of burn up and disappear.
Yeah.
Like, to me, that is like a guilty conscious. Like, I want them to go to hell, but I don't want them to like suffer forever. That seems like overkill. It seems,
that's a bit much.
Then we've got your universalist interpretations, which again are way forgiving. I don't think that there's good context for it, but I see why they go here.
Yeah.
God ultimately reconciles everyone.
Hmm.
Yeah.
Wow. That's
you can eventually like work your way out of hell.
Yeah.
You know, you can be punished enough or be punished so much that you work through your shit and eventually reach redemption.
I feel like that's just an interpretation they wanted to put in there.
That's what I said.
Not anything to do with anything that we've read.
And we saw that a lot, like, in the show Lucifer.
Yeah.
And there have been other literary and television shows and movies that really lean into this idea that bad people do go to hell and they do get punished and it can last forever, but it doesn't have to. And your hell is whatever you imagine it to be and that you can work through it, but it's up to you to do the work.
I feel like everlasting punishment is a hard sell for a religion that believes in redemption right up until death.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, you can redeem yourself right up until death. And if you don't, though, you burn forever.
Yeah.
What?
You can even redeem yourself right at the last fucking second.
Yeah.
Like, what? But then it's too late.
Yeah. If you die 1 second too early, then you're fucked.
Yeah.
So, you know.
Like, that just seems silly. It's just so childish.
Yeah.
It's so silly and childish. And I can't with it. So I could see why the universalist interpretation is a thing.
Yeah.
You know? I think everybody likes the idea that bad people do get punished and that karma will eventually catch up to you, if not in life, then in the afterlife, but that you can eventually be forgiven and find redemption.
Sure.
That to me is the most beautiful story for a religious.
Yeah, because we all fuck up, right?
Yeah.
I mean, like, the redemption is a beautiful thing to humans because we've all had our fuck ups.
Right.
You know, and we all have something we would love to be forgiven for. And it makes sense to us. It's easy. It's an easy sell to have a God that will like that. That's just something that people crave.
No, it just struck me, though, that Christians might accuse atheists of saying, well, y'all have it's too late because once people die, they're gone forever. And that's it. And there is no chance of redemption because they're gone forever. Right?
Sure. No, absolutely. So, but we also don't claim that we're going to be tortured forever after we die.
Right.
So,
right.
You know.
But I'm just saying, like, that might be their argument is like, well, we both agree that, you know, redemption is impossible once you're dead. You're either gone forever or punished forever. And I'm like,
sure.
Well, I prefer gone forever to punished forever, but
I prefer science to fairy tales. So.
Yes. Yes. And that is the absolute there.
Yeah.
So even if you reject eternal conscious torment,
yeah,
Matthew, the book thereof, absolutely is presenting an extraordinarily severe final judgment here.
Yeah.
And the imagery is not gentle, okay? Jesus talks about fire, exclusion, separation, punishment, irreversible judgment. Like,
yeah,
it's done. It's done and it's bad and it's hard.
Right.
You're not going to like it. Matthew's Jesus is clearly comfortable using fear of judgment as a motivational tool. Do this or else, and you'll be fucked. fucking sorry.
Right.
Like, wow, calm your tits, Jesus. Right? So the through line of Matthew chapter 25 is this. The Messiah is coming. You don't know when. Your job while waiting for 2,000 plus years is not to sit around doing nothing. Be prepared. Use the talents that you've been given and take care of vulnerable people. Your eternal destiny hinges on how you treated people while you were living. That's the ultimate chapter 25 message. Or was that 25
or
26?
Like, I feel like Christians are failing.
I feel like humanity as a whole is failing. I mean, did you know that July just recorded the hottest summer on record for the United States?
Yes, I saw that actually.
So, yeah, humanity as a whole is fucking failing, Christian or otherwise.
No, we're fucked.
Yeah. definitely.
But not because, you know, any fucking God.
No.
Actually, you know what? You could say that we are fucked because of God, I think, because a lot of the stupidity
is religious based.
Is religious based.
Either religious based or those pretending to lead the religion to get what they want.
Sure. And but it is kind of, it's not funny. It's ironic that a lot of this bullshit that is happening in our world and the reasons that we can't move forward and the reasons that might end up causing humanity to reach an end are possibly in part due to religion, due to Christianity,
beliefs. At the very least, it's an anti-science movement.
Sure.
Even where it's not pro religion, it's definitely an anti-education, anti-science, anti-medicine movement.
Right. It's certainly not helping matters right now.
Right.
How's that?
Yeah.
So.
And on that happy, healthy note.
Yeah, that was Matthew chapter 25 Q&A.
Yes.
Is that what you were going for?
Yeah, I think so.
Okay.
I couldn't remember what chapter it was. I think it was
25.
Okay. 25. Yeah.
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 So that was Matthew chapter 25 Q&A. And we are going to have one more Q&A, which will be
Little Maddie, chapter 26.
Yes. And then this will release on Tuesday, so if you catch this one, we're going to have our live tonight. You should join us on Discord. Links are in the show note, 10 p.m. Eastern. Be there. Do it. And then we'll have our Q&A, and then the live will release the day after that.
And during the live, we will be reading chapter 27.
Yes, that is correct.
We're so out of order that it's difficult. So you probably just were like, blah, 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 blah. Like, that's what we sound like to you.
Anyway, thanks for joining us, and we will see you next time.
Bye.
Hey, wife, I guess that's the end.
But husband, that's just sad.
It doesn't have to be. We are on lots of social media platforms like Twitter. Our handle there is sacrilegious_D.
For D's nuts.
Oh my God. Stop doing that. Anyway, we're also on Facebook, Instagram, and Pinterest. There's a link to all of our social media sites at our website.
Ooh, we have a website?
Yeah, it's sacrilegiousdiscourse.com, where you can also find a link to our merch shop.
We have a merch shop?
Yep. We have podcast-themed clothing, mugs, notebooks, and more, as well as an atheist and science-themed products.
Wow, our fans should really go check that out right now.
Definitely. They can get in touch with us by sending an email to sacrilegiousdiscourse@gmail.com. But before they do that, we could really use some help.
Oh yeah? With what?
Well, it's not free running the podcast, and we need some financial support in order to get better equipment, which will free up time so we can concentrate on our podcast and our fans.
Okay, so what should they do?
Head over to patreon.com/sacrilegiousdiscourse and sign up as a contributor on our podcast. Supporters there receive additional bi-weekly episodes that we record just for our Patreon members for as little as $2 a month.
Also, we'd really appreciate it if you would like and subscribe on whatever platform you're using.
And Apple Podcast reviews help us out tremendously.
Like and subscribe. Leave an Apple review. Join us on Twitter. Support us on Patreon. That's a lot of instructions. Don't forget to say thanks.
Thanks.
Okay, bye.